Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Well, good Monday afternoon to all of you, or depending upon when you end up listening to this show, perhaps it'll be later in the day. I'd like to welcome you to the Born to Talk Radio Show, where conversations plus connections equals community. And I'm really excited to have Mitchell Levy on my show today. Welcome to the show, Mitchell.
Thanks, Marcia. Great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm. It's kind of exciting because, frankly, this isn't your first go-around with me, and I just want our listeners to know that, I mean, you got a repertoire of accomplishments that are as long as my arm, but I'll just say briefly that for those of you that may not know, Mitchell is a TEDx speaker. He's an international best-selling author of over 60 books. He's a thought leader, and he's a global credibility expert. And we're going to be talking about those subjects today. But before we do, Mitchell, I think for those folks that maybe did not listen and don't really know too much about you, I thought you could just take a few moments and just let our guests know just a little bit about yourself.
So that's a good question. So, do you want the personal side? You want a little bit more about the business side? What would you like?
Well, I don't want to meet for dinner, but I would like to know the personal side just a little bit. Well, I wouldn't mind meeting for dinner, but we don't live in the same city.
You know,
we got this social distancing business going on right now. But just a little bit, you know, where did you grow up? Where was your education? Just a little bit about that, and then I have a ton of questions to ask you.
Oh, sure. Sure, of course. So I born and raised on the East Coast, have been living in Silicon Valley now for 35 years. I happily married for 31 years, have a 22-year-old son who I'm happy to say he graduated, but graduated in a virtual way because he just graduated this year. So he Corona graduated. And I am one of those people who I have always done what I liked doing. I've always done what's been fun and interesting. And very recently, I figured out what the rest of my life purpose is. And so I'm excited to be here. I'm happy to be here with you right now.
You know, that's really terrific what you just said. And words really mean a great deal to me. And what you just almost gave just then was almost a definition of mindfulness and of just being present in the moment. And just like you feel like you know your purpose, and I know that you do, you're quite accomplished. Our purpose sometimes moves around a little bit. It's kind of like, you know, COVID, how does this all work? And we're kind of adjusting to this uncertainty that we're all living in. But I know that words matter a great deal to you. I know you're an author. I know that you're a speaker. There's a whole lot to you. And that's what this whole hour is about. It's putting you on the other side of the microphone as being that person that, and I know that in our world, these are called interviews, and I know that that's a term that you use, and I know that that's a professional term of what I do, but I always think of these more like a conversation with you sitting in the backyard and, you know, what have you been up to? And I enjoy that, and I know that's part of my purpose and what I get that fills my coffee tank. You see how you talk, how it fills my gas tank to just have these opportunities for these fabulous conversations. And because words matter, I think that those words will be very much part of the focus of our show today. And I think the place I would really like to start is the fact that you are a thought leader. Now, I would really like to know what that means to you, and I also would like to let people know before you define that, that if you – Mitchell is very visible on the Internet, and you can easily find him at mitchelllevy.com. And he also has another website called thoughtleaderlife.com. And I'll make sure that I have that written down in my blog. But could we just start with that definition of what a thought leader actually means? Describe what that is to me.
Sure. And actually, for those listening out, I've got about 200 domains, at least 50 or so are active. I'm going to give one more domain, which is thinkaha.com. The reason I want to give that one is I actually have a definition of thought leadership and a couple graphs and a bunch of videos. And although I put that together now, it's probably close to a decade ago, it's still relevant today.
And it is.
The concept of thought leadership, if we go back 20, 25 years, the thought leader was the person that the publishing company said was the expert in a space, that the movie companies, the production companies were saying was the actor in the space, that the recording studios were saying that this is the artist in the genre called and fill in R&B, rock, whatever it is. And so the term thought leader represented back then that one person who was at top of the mountain, who was the most successful at what they were doing in their space. So it's the one that everyone looked to. And so what happened is the reason that one person was put up there is that their companies themselves wanted to make money and monetize. So they wanted to sell albums or sell books or whatever that was that they were focused on. Now, what happened is we all ended up with a microphone. We all ended up with a camera. And the concept of thought leadership started changing in terms of verbiage. And let me reframe it for you now. The thought leader is the person you look to solve a particular issue or a particular concern. So let me give you the most basic answer of thought leadership. When you're 4 or 5 or 6 years old and you're sick, who do you turn to? Mom or dad. That's your thought leader. If you were trying to do something new, a newfangled, hey, email, I've got too many of them I need to fix, or I want to be able to shoot videos, or, hey, this podcast thing is now really important, who do you turn to? That person is your own personal thought leader. And I think what happens and what you have to think about, it's if you want to use the word recognized expert in your space, it's that recognized expert, that thought leader is the person you turn to solve a particular issue or a particular problem, a particular concern you have. So it's the person you think about as the person who has, i.e., some of the best thoughts on the topic you have interest in.
That is so well defined. And I would imagine that for all of us that are listening, we have, I'll just speak for me, we have multiple thought leaders. I know for me, in this technology, some of my friends say, I cannot even believe what you're doing at this stage in your life. And I said, you know, it's really easy to know what you're doing when you know what you're doing. But when you don't know what you're doing, sometimes you don't even know what to ask. You don't even know where to move forward. And with the technology today, let's just take Zoom as an example. How many of us are using Zoom in a professional way, but also in a personal way? Certainly people that have iPhone to iPhone or Android to Android can do FaceTime with their families across the country. But when we get into this Brady Bunch kind of look where you're on a screen and you're seeing, in my case, my Rotary Club or my family that's in Michigan and Arizona, this new technology is great once you know how to use it. But if you don't, then you need to find somebody that does. And I think that you've just uncomplicated for me personally what a thought leader is, because maybe it's just trying to understand your new camera. Or in the real business world, somebody that really is considered an expert that, as you said, in our space, that can help resolve or solve an issue. So I appreciate you explaining that in terms that make sense to me. And that does make sense. And you're right. You know, and it's really funny when you said the aha, because I know you have a lot of different sites, and I'll make sure that they're included. But, you know, when you hear aha, it's like, aha. You know, it's kind of, I don't know about anybody else, but I can't do that with my hands in my lap. If I say aha, my hand goes up, my fingers go open like a starfish in yoga, and it's like aha, and it's like, oh wow, it's something you don't forget, and you are that aha guy, and I love that about you. But we're going to talk about some things that are important to you right now, and I think, frankly, it's important to all of us right now, and that is the fact that you are considered a global credibility expert. And you do have a website for that as well. But we're going to talk about that now, Mitchell, and spend some time really in discussion of that. But I don't think we can start forward in that without also going back to that dictionary, going back to that glossary of terms, just like thought leaders. So I think a great place to start with this subject is the definition of how to define credibility. So let's start there. What is it?
that's a great question. So when I look at the dictionary, I'm going to tell you what the dictionary says the word credibility is today. Credibility is the demonstration of trust. And if you want to unpack trust a little bit, I did a TED Talk in 2017, and the word trust I broke into three components. It's really the demonstration of integrity, authenticity, and vulnerability. So you could say then that the dictionary says the definition of credibility is the demonstration of integrity, vulnerability, and authenticity. And what happens is, I'm going to tell you, that is one-third accurate. So to back up to tell you how I have this, I'm close to the end of interviewing 500 thought leaders on credibility. I've interviewed, as of today or as of last week, 477.
Wow.
And along the way, I started learning a lot of things, like some new words that can help us define credibility. But ultimately, just like the word thought leader has changed over time, the word credibility has changed over time. And so I'm going to share this with you, although I was thinking of waiting until the book comes out. So after interviewing 500 people, I'll be done with the interviews by the end of August. I will be publishing the book on the topic around October, at the beginning of October. But I'll share with you now what that new definition is. Credibility should be the demonstration of know, like, and trust. So let me add to, when I say the word know, it is not just that I know of you. Awareness is not what I mean by the word know. What the word know means is that I understand who you are. I understand your commitment. I understand your intent. And I'm also going to use the word integrity again. I understand your integrity. So if I know you, do I know that you're going to, when you say something, you actually mean it? And if you could give me a promise, you're actually going to follow through in it. And so the word credibility is that I know who you are and who it is I'm interacting with. I actually, the word like needs to be part of it. You now have access to people completely around the world, and you may know they would do a great job. You may trust that they're going to do a great job, but you may not like their politics. And if that's enough to bother you or to make you decide that you want to go with one person versus another, like has to be a very strong component of what the word credibility is. So in essence, to summarize, credibility is the demonstration of know, like, and trust.
That's really great. And you know, even within those three words, depending where you are in your life, depending where you are in your experiences in life, those words also can take on additional meaning as well. In your book that's coming out in October, geez, maybe you need to come back next, you know, in the fall. Do you have the title of the book, or are you not allowed to say that at this point?
So, I'm happy. I'm happy to share. It won't be that hard to figure this out. Mm-hmm. We actually haven't publicized it yet, but I'm happy to share. So, when I first started the interviews, I started thinking about Napoleon Hill. Napoleon Hill interviewed 500 millionaires and came up with the book Think and Grow Rich. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking Mitchell Levy is going to interview 500 thought leaders. And at the time, I didn't know the title of my book. So about halfway through, around interview 250, I said, okay, this is silly. I need to know. And the title of the book I came up with at the time is For Humans That Want to Be Seen as Credible. And for a long time, I was thinking that was the right title. And about 2 weeks ago, I realized that that's the subtitle. And the title of the book is very simple. It's Credibility Nation. And
oh,
the focus
that.
Overall is to create a bunch of people. Like, how cool would it be if you were able to interact with people in Credibility Nation and you just kind of knew what you were getting into? You knew exactly what was happening when you shook somebody's hand or made a commitment over Zoom, and you got exactly what you asked for, and they delivered exactly
mm-hmm.
what they said they would.
Mm-hmm. That's really neat. When you started this whole interviewing process, and I know you're up to like I think 477 or something like that, which is just unbelievable to me. Was it your intention? And that's another fabulous word, frankly. Was it your intention by doing those interviews that would ultimately result in a book for you?
Oh, yes. That was certainly part of the intent.
Okay.
It was simply, when you do that type of research, one of many potential outputs would have been, it has to be documented in the form of a book. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But I want to get back to credibility because, frankly, depending upon, you know, you defined it from the dictionaries, integrity, authenticity, and vulnerability, which, you know, are all pretty important words as well. You've taken this to, you've got a really cool site. And I'm actually looking at that site while we speak. And I'm going to spell it for people, but it will also be in my written blog about our show today. But people can go to a website, and I'm going to spell it because I'm not sure I can say it exactly right, but I think it would be pronounced Credust. It's spelled CREDUST.com. And on that site, which I'm looking at right now, you really take us through some words of credibility and use those first four letters to trademark and actually talk about credibility. And I thought we could really spend some time talking about those words and what they mean. And actually the first one I'd like to start with would be the cred reel, if you don't mind. And let's let people know what is the cred reel and what that's all about.
Sure. So the cred reel is, it turns out that as I'm interviewing people, when you interview people who are smart and capable and potentially the types of people in the world who really are givers, they really are servant leaders, they often will give you presents. Most people will if you listen to them. So I was interviewing Whitney Johnson. Whitney has 1.8 million followers on LinkedIn. And what I was able to do in a half hour is that 5 or 10 minutes up front where I get to do a little bit of coaching on the five questions that are part of the interview, get to actually conduct the interview. And then I have enough time left over for a couple minute video testimonial. So I've got 400 video testimonials. Wow. By the way, I didn't realize I could take video testimonials until I was about 80 interviews in. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. It's kind of easy to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So Whitney Johnson gave me a present, but at the time she gave it to me, I wasn't ready for it. So when I said, hey, Whitney, what do you think? And I put myself on mute, and she said a couple things, and then she goes, thank you again, Mitchell Levy, for letting me shoot my credibility sizzle reel. And so I was polite and said, hey, thank you so much. How beautiful. And I sort of hung up, and I can't remember if I had another interview afterwards, but for some reason, I don't think I did. And then I don't know what the right word is. I was uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
because I know what a speaker sizzle reel is. A speaker sizzle reel takes the speaker and encourages the speaker to sort of sizzle, right? You want to show the speaker speaking on different stages in front of a large audience. It's the goal is to sizzle. And so when I was thinking about it, and by the way, I didn't come up with the answer that evening, but I woke up in the morning and I knew exactly what Whitney was referring to. I go, oh my God, how cool is this? A speaker sizzle reel, once again, is designed to make the speaker sizzle. A credibility sizzle reel is designed to make the person shine. And I go, oh my God, that's exactly what all the interviews I've been doing. It's five questions. Those five questions can be answered in 6 to 8 minutes. And in those 6 to 8 minutes, you get to know, like, and trust somebody. And the really fascinating part is I actually was the gift that I got from Whitney was, oh, hey, Mitchell, you've been shooting, and I just shortened the word to cred reel. You've been shooting cred reels, and thanks for letting me shoot mine. I'm like, oh my God, how cool is that? So that's where the word cred reel came from, was simply I just shortened credibility sizzle reel. Now, oh, okay. Can I go on for a sec? Do you mind?
Oh, please. I'm all ears. This is all about you.
That actually answers your question. I was just going to now talk about some of the other words. So you can follow through if you want, and then I'll.
Well, I guess just to follow up, I just want to say, you know, part of your skills that I admire so much about you is your ability to discern what you've heard. And you didn't really know exactly what that gift was, and you kind of let it sit there. You didn't discount it. You didn't remove it. You just let it, like I had a guest on my show a few weeks ago, wrote a book about percolating. She used that as a defining thing about her. And I see that with you. That just sort of percolated over the night. And you got up in the morning and you went, whoa, I've got a clear mind right now, and I can see where I can use this as a really good way of sizzle. You know, what does sizzle mean? It usually means it's like, you know, shining and sparkling and cool. And I can see where that just came to you, and I admire that about you. And I think that's just another thing that makes you so fascinating. You know, like it's not just that Dos Equis guy. I think you're one of those guys too. So in talking about, I mean,
thank
that.
You, by the way, I got that reference. Thank you.
Have you got that reference before?
No, but I got it from you right now. That's beautiful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, that's my gift. There's that Heineken guy, and there you are. You can be holding the bottle of water. Okay. So you were talking about cred dust, and I thought now if you wanted to, you know, just define more about what that is and move us forward, please, by all means, the stage is yours.
Oh, sure. Yeah, thanks. So another gift that I received was from somebody interviewed by the guy, David Meerman Scott. David is the guy who invented the word newsjacking. Newsjacking is when there's something in the news and you associate your firm, your product, your individual with that, and you end up getting press about it. And so I'm talking to David afterwards. We had a little bit of extra time. I said, hey, David, what do you think? How do I get known around the world for credibility? And he goes, invent a word. I go, really? He goes, yeah, I've done it before. He goes, what's your word? And he didn't mean me to say anything. And I go, cred dust. He goes, no, Mitchell, listen, you got 6 months. It took me a while to invent this. And you could wait. And I said, David, I just don't know if it's 1D or 2. And here's what he said is, for those words you want to invent and you want to put them into the Oxford Dictionary, don't put a copyright on them. Don't put a trademark on them. You essentially want to put them in the public domain and let people use them. And so I've now come up with probably around 10 different words that help describe credibility in a better way. And one of them, as soon as I say what cred dust means, you're going to go, oh, yeah, we do this all the time. Cred dust is that sparkle that happens to both you and the other person when you share somebody else's credibility. Mm-hmm. And you've seen it happen many times. If you've seen somebody on stage, and what they're doing is they see somebody in the audience and go, oh, hey, take a look at so-and-so. They've done and worked on this. And I see that all the time. Or it's when you reference somebody else's body of work, even in this interview, you know, how many people reference Napoleon Hill for things that they do or reference other things in the marketplace. And that's what you're doing is you're spreading cred dust. And the fascinating part about that particular word is that it's so obvious. Like, oh, great. So now instead of actually saying, hey, are you being a servant leader? Are you sharing lots of people's other content? When you learned, you share this stuff, you can make a statement like, well, what cred dust did you share today? And you know exactly what that means, right? And so what I ended up doing is I just picked up the URL cred dust, and I actually, if you go to that page, you will actually mm-hmm. see that it looks like a dictionary, and it's got the yep. it's got the way it sounds. You can click on the how it sounds, and there's a video on what it means. And what I ended up doing is for CredReel, I decided to trademark CredReel because the process of doing a credibility interview in 6 to 8 minutes that can truly allow you to know, like, and trust somebody. I've been asked to actually create processes where other people can license that. So I decided for CredReel to actually go forward with the trademark application. But for things like CredDust, or let me give you another one, which is fun, CredCrud.
Yes.
Love that word. Right?
I do, so too.
Here's what's interesting about CredCrud. We all have it, okay, some more than others. And it is those silly things that we do or ignore that they don't necessarily completely throw you out of the mix, but when you demonstrate cred crud, people like you just a little bit less, or they look at your credibility just a little bit less. So my favorite things to be thinking about in terms of cred crud is when I go to somebody's website and at the bottom of the website, they're not using the copyright symbol properly. They're not, mm-hmm. they haven't copyrighted themselves, or the copyright is 2 or 3 years old. I mean, imagine going to a book publisher or any sort of publisher and they've got their copyright as a year or two old. How does that make you feel about them? Now, it's cred crud. Cred crud doesn't mean I don't use them. It's just I feel slightly uncomfortable. The more cred crud that builds up, the better chance that you may not use that particular product or service. I kind of, my analogy is simply a plaque on your teeth. Your mm-hmm. dentist has told you for years, you know, a little bit of plaque doesn't guarantee a cavity, but the more plaque you start piling on, the better chance you have of getting one or more cavities. So that's what mm-hmm. cred is.
I love it. I love how you've done that. And how you've taken that, the CRED, and developed a dictionary of other words that is so easy to understand, and like you said on that page where I'm looking right now, you know, you can watch yourself speak about that, and I think that's really terrific. If you were going to give some examples of your experience with cred crud, which is, I suppose, the negative. Maybe I'd like to ask this a little differently. Could you give me, because I do want to get to those 5 questions. I'm really very interested in knowing about that. But do you have a couple of examples of what you would use that would go back to the first word that we talked about and give me some examples of cred dust, which is where you are sprinkling something positive. What would be, who comes to mind when you think of that?
Oh, so anyone who's classically trained as a NSA speaker, by definition, if you're on stage, the first thing you do is you thank the host. After that, you thank any dignitaries in the audience. And more importantly, if there's a topic matter where somebody is in the audience that you know that has also shared that content or shared similar content, you share that. Because what's cred crud is taking somebody else's idea and using it as is, right? That would be cred crud. Cred dust is really going out of your way and sharing other people's content. Because if you're going back to that first word, thought leader, that we came up with, thought leader doesn't mean you have to originate all those thoughts. Thought leader means that you've gathered the thoughts that many other people in your space have created, and you've been able to analyze them from your perspective, and you made them relevant to me if I'm looking at you as a thought leader, right? And so that's what that means. I think I did enough on cred dust. On cred crud, I'm not a big fan of negative stuff either, but what one of the things I ended up doing is I ended up building a one-hour course the primary focus of that course is to put credibility into your LinkedIn profile. And what caused me to do that first, that particular course first, is one of the things that happens when I do the interview and when I'm interviewing somebody else, I get to know them really well. You can't actually get to know, like, and trust somebody and deliver that in a 6 to 8 minute interview if you don't know the person you're interacting with. If you don't know their intent and their commitment and their vulnerability and what they're good at, what they're not good at, it's hard to focus. And what was interesting is how many people's LinkedIn profile was kind of two-dimensional, looked a lot more like a resume, was really just, I mean, how many people when you say, hey, do you have a good LinkedIn profile, how many people say, oh, yeah, or, oh, my God, I haven't looked at LinkedIn, in 6 months, a couple years, or whatever that number is. And I have to tell you, in the B2B space, the primary vehicle, there is only one winner at the moment, and that is LinkedIn as the way in which people are meeting other people. And if somebody meets you, what's one of the first things they're doing? They're going to Google your name. Well, the social media companies basically have spent hundreds of millions of dollars annually so that your name and their product, i.e. LinkedIn, pops up. And so what happened is so many people had such crappy LinkedIn profiles. I created a course which originally, the way I was going to call the name, my team actually made me change the name, but I originally was going to call it, How Does a Global Credibility Expert Look at Your LinkedIn Profile? And so that is really the structure of the course. And then we've changed it to Designing Credibility into Your LinkedIn Profile. But at the end of the day, it is one of those things that if you can give somebody a series of aha messages designed around a particular point of view, and they actually can see that point of view, it means that once they interpret it and they listen to it and they interact with it, they will never change. It will affect their point of view. And so that's what the course it's a 1 hour course. It's designed to let people completely focus on what's important in terms of their LinkedIn profile to attract those people that they need to attract. Does that
make
sense?
Great. And I'm sure that's on your website, right? Where you could, sign up for that course. Is it on your?
It's easy to get to it in a number of different places. What I'll say at the end, but I'll say now, is one of the places I send people to is MitchellLevy360.com. So it's just my name, the number 360 at the end. I know we have, because they have too many domains. So if you go to MitchellLevy360.com, one of the first things that pops up at the moment is the current LinkedIn course. So it'll bring you, it'll show you a video on what the LinkedIn course is, and you can click on it to get to the appropriate page.
Got it. Okay. I'll make sure that, depending upon people's style of listening to a podcast, some people are listening live. Some people might be taking notes like I am. Some people might be listening in the car. Our lifestyles have such, talk about another word that has a C in it, but put the UN in front of it, which is uncertainty. We live in such uncertain times right now. I mean, the only thing that we would all agree with, I would think globally, is that uncertainty is definitely a word that there isn't anybody that can't relate to. It doesn't matter what your age is. It doesn't matter where you live, unless you are I don't even know who couldn't understand that term. Everybody may have a definition, a different definition for how that relates to them. But certainly now we are living in uncertain times, and I think people like you and me we have a great opportunity to encourage people to listen to my podcast, to listen to your show, so that people can go, wow, I really learned something here, and I can go back and listen to that. And I think that that's terrific, and I applaud you, Mitchell, because, I mean, you have to stay in balance. You cannot be 24/7 on a website continuing to work, because then you won't know what's happening on Jeopardy. You know, you won't know that baseball started yesterday. You won't know that the birds are out and the hawk was in your yard. I mean, we have to find some balance. Otherwise, we are not going to be satisfied humans. And I noticed that you used that word initially when you were thinking about naming your book. That is another thing that we all have in common as humanity. But going to your interviews, I'm just, as somebody that does this, I'm fascinated by the fact that you've done this. I know the kind of work that goes into this. And granted, my podcasts are 1 hour long, and that's, you know, I have kids in my 40s, and one of my kids said, "Mom, who's going to listen to a 1 hour podcast? Are you serious?" Well, that was real for her at her stage in life. Others would say, "Well, yeah, we all do 1 hour." So it's all dependent, right? So no need to apologize. I don't need to apologize. But I would like to just hear about, because I've done the math. If you're up to 477 shows, how many interviews a week are you doing?
So because I'm now at the end, I've slowed down
there
to
you go. It's
about
five.
Six or seven. Mm-hmm. But there was a point in time, and by the way, this, my team got really mad at this. There was a point in time I was doing 20 in a week, which was essentially 10. What I've done, let me tell you two of my superpowers that I knew before I started doing the interviews. One is pulling the genius out of somebody's head. And two is building systems. So for the first 2 months of interviews, we did, I think it was four or five interviews each, because I wanted to see where the system was going to break, right? So that was the most important, is to figure out what would work and what didn't. So in essence, been doing this for 11 months. So the way to think about it, it's 9 months divided into 467, right? Is how many we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a system, you have a process, things actually work. And we were able to, in a 30-minute period of time, I was able to both give 5 or 10 minutes coaching up front, conduct the interview, and get a video testimonial all in that 30-minute period. And one of the reasons for that is, as part of the process, when somebody signed on, they also get a video on how to prepare. And in the preparation, given that you have 5 questions, so this is different than the interactive conversation you and I are having now.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I wanted to do is structure an environment that was statistically significant at proving, and I didn't know all the things that would come out of it. But at the end of the day, what I wanted to really do is define what credibility meant. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, for those people who take the interview seriously, I mean, it's amazing. I have people who come on and go, "Mitchell, I think I've watched almost every interview," or I can't believe you just, the last 2 days have been mayhem because I decided not to do anything else but watch this. And then here's what's really fascinating. The first question that I ask, and this is another one of those terms I put up there, is CPOP. What is your customer point of pain? So the first question I ask is, what is your CPOP? Now, here's the fascinating part. As a society, well, I'm just going to say a U.S. society, but you could say a world society, 98% of people cannot answer their customer point of pain without a little bit of coaching. Because as we live today, we're still a direct byproduct of the industrial age. The industrial age was all about me, in particular, is all about the company whose goal was to make money. And so what we've been taught classically trained people from NSA and anyone else who's been classically trained networkers, when people say, what do? What is the first words that typically come out of your mouth is, I do this or we do that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that came out of the interviews is that when you start a sentence with I or we, there's a percentage of the population who says, wait, this is a salesperson trying to sell me something, and they actually close off the next 30 seconds.
Hmm.
So if you're going to be giving a 30-second pitch or your value proposition, which is 30 seconds or less, and they don't hear for the next 30 seconds, you've kind of killed yourself by saying, I do this or we do that. And so what I used to say, Marsha, I used to say that the value proposition is dead and the CPOP is alive. Now, I don't say that anymore. I can actually say I was wrong. What I can say is the value proposition is important. It's just not the first thing you want to say.
That's
the first
really
thing you want to say is, if somebody says, who are you? What do? The first thing you want to do is you want to describe the customer point of pain you solve. Right. And so typically if you go to, CPOP, which is you go to CredDust and there's a button you can click on there that brings you to CPOP. It's typically who do you serve and what is the pain point they solve? And what ended up happening, Marsha, is when I started getting all these testimonials back, there was a single word I kept hearing. And I'm now going to say it's apparently my third superpower I apply in business, and that's clarity. And the ability to clarify somebody's message in such a way that you can say it in 3 seconds, 10 words or less. And so what happens is no matter who you are in the world, there's a pain point you're solving that you can specify in less than 10 words. And that's what a CPOP is, a customer point of pain. And so I'm excited that I was able to, I guess, fine-tune my skills on clarity. And going back to your initial question that got me down this sort of track is you've been doing a bunch of video interviews. And the answer is yes. And so what happened is I love the ability to create a cred reel, to be able to interact with somebody and really understand who they are. And for those people who practice appropriately and got ready to go, Some of those people, I mean, amazing results. Now, some people, we did not get amazing results. Either they didn't practice or they didn't prepare or half hour wasn't enough. So now as I'm getting closer to the end and I'm now charging to have a cred reel done, not for those people who are part of the 500, but post 500, I'm now charging for this. I've increased the amount of time to 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I publicly state this, but if I get somebody who's paid me money to shoot a cred reel, and in the first 20 minutes we have not seen eye to eye, I'm gonna make this single statement. Hey, listen, I don't think we've got this in line, right? For whatever reason, we're not here yet. Why don't we reschedule the actual shooting of your cred reel, and why don't we practice and talk about you for the next 25 minutes.
Great.
Because that's the value. The value to me is I want to deliver the best cred reel, the best way that somebody can have a 6 to 8 minute video on themselves that really demonstrates who they are. And I, like I said, almost all of the interviews were done in a half hour, and some are good and some are not so good. And you know what? That was one other thing I thought about. It leads me into the direction of the statement, show up when you show up, is the first time somebody came late or the first time they came within minutes to go, I was like, oh, my God, that's really annoying. How can people do that? And the answer is they weren't taught properly. Things weren't set up appropriately. And I kind of thought, well, should I get mad? And I kind of realized to myself, I can't get mad because this is research. And I should know the state of the world of who we sit today. But let me give you these stats. It turns out when we first started doing the interviews, 11% of the people would come early, which is 10 minutes or before. And I loved it when people would come early because then you get to chat and get to talk to each other a little bit further. And that was beautiful. About 50% come on time, which is between 9 minutes and 4 minutes. Now, the shocking part are the people who come late. It's about 20% of the people come late between 4 minutes or, I'm sorry, 3 minutes and zero. And now here's the piece that really, really was the most shocking is there are, at the moment, it's 4%, 4% of the population of the 477 who actually come super late. I have a live show.
Really?
And they come after the half hour for a live show. So let's put it in another way. So if you're listening to this, how would you like to be interviewed by the global credibility expert? And tell me that you would think it's credible that you come after the half hour for a live show talking about your credibility. And when you put it that way, like no one will say, oh, of course it's credible. 4% of the people do it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You mentioned that you had five questions. And so I know the first one was, what is the customer's point of pain? That's the CPOP. What's question number two?
So this is interesting. I'll say something credible after hearing their CPOP, and then I'll say, tell me more. And remember before when I said that the value proposition is not, you know, I said the CPOP is good and the value proposition is bad. That was actually a mistake, because when I say tell me more, I'm kind of looking for your value proposition. If the first words out of your mouth is the recognition that you understand the pain point, that might be the pain point I have, and the second words out of your mouth is you have a company that actually addresses that pain point, that's really powerful for me. So that's really what the question two is in 1 minute. Tell me a little bit more, which is, how do you address that pain point? How does your firm, how does you as an individual address that pain point?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does.
All right.
So what's number three?
The third question is, how do you have credibility to do what you do? And it's really fascinating to hear how people answer that question, because there are many different approaches. Some are educational. You know, so I got these degrees here and did this there. But the types of questions that I'm most excited about is the PhD that people have received in the School of Hard Knocks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if it's a particular thing, you've been doing it for a while, I'll give you an example. There was this one guy early on where, you know, he answered the question, you know, I got my PhD here. We've been doing this research there. We've been solving this problem for a while. And I just, all of a sudden, I got in the back of my head. I'm like, you know, because we hadn't talked about this in the green room ahead of time. I go, how many people have you solved with this approach? He goes, over 1,000. I'm like, oh, my God, let's say that first next time. Right? Because, you know, if you're the first person to try a new technique, that's one thing. But if 1,000 other people have done it, you're like, oh, I'm feeling more comfortable. So it turns out, Marcia, that those first three questions is the demonstration of trust. Do you understand that? Question one, do you understand the pain point that's being addressed in the industry? Two, how do you actually do it effectively? And three, give me some war stories. How do you have credibility to do what you do? If you listen to those three answers, that's what helps you understand whether or not you trust somebody.
Right. That's you know, I'd be kidding if you don't think I'm not listening to this and wondering how I'd be answering all these questions.
Can do that afterwards if you like.
There you go. I mean, I've been the host of my show since April of 2015. So what's question number four? And you know what? I want to interrupt you before you do that, because I am listening to what you said. And the way I responded just that moment is I started with the word I. Trust me, as soon as that came out of my mouth, I went, were you missing something in this letter? Continue. I'm listening, dude. I am listening to you. Okay, number four.
Well, before I do number four, I could actually tell you at the beginning of the interviews, when I would tell mm-hmm. people what the right way to do it, I did it myself. Mm-hmm. It just, we're so trained, classically trained, into mm-hmm. saying, I do this or we do that. It is so hard not to focus on that. And the mm-hmm. reason why the title of my book was For Humans That Want to Be Seen as Credible is my CPOP is simply Humans That Want to Be Seen as Credible. And so I just mm-hmm. thought, hey, the title of my book should be my CPOP. I just happen to have a better title now. So question
okay.
four.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Question four is very easy for many people to focus on one thing. The way the question is defined, it says, how do you go about sharing your credibility? And so if you're thinking about the classical definition, the definition that is in or about credibility today in the dictionary, what you're thinking to yourself is, well, let's go back to the word social media. I think when you and I talked last time, we had this mm-hmm. discussion, social media is two words, the word social and the word media. And most people, mm-hmm. when they think about social media, they spend all of their time taking the object called media and saying, hey, I got a microphone, I got a camera, let me tell everyone about me.
Mm-hmm.
And what they don't recognize is the most important element in those two words is the word social. How can you use mm-hmm. the media to be more social? Okay. So let's go back to how do you share your credibility? How do you let people actually see you? And by see you, how do they get to know you, your intent, your commitment, your integrity? How do they get to know you? How could they decide if they like you? So on the know part, how do you go about sharing your credibility? Many people start with, well, I've got a podcast and I have books and I speak from stage. And that's part of the answer.
Mm-hmm.
The answer I really want, the piece that's really, how do they get to know you a little bit better? Like, what is it that's really part of you? How do you spread cred dust? Or how do you help those people who are affected by your CPOP, how do you help them above and beyond what everyone else does? And so that's the thing that question four is the one that is intended to allow people to sort of endear themselves to you. It's, if you think about know, like, and trust, it's the know part. So
mm-hmm.
first three questions is about trust. The fourth question is about know. How do I get to know you? All right, I had a guy mm-hmm. on, and he's the guy who will be the primary charity that I work with for the short term. And what he does is he's taking money out of his own pocket to help drive a company that is focused on feeding hungry children in the United States.
Fabulous.
That wow. His CPOP, which was scary, his CPOP is food insecurity. And if you're listening to this and you're in the United States, there are millions of children in the United States that have food insecurity as the biggest thing they're worried about. It's like, it's hard to not hear that and sort
Take
of like
deep breath,
have tears
like I
well
did.
Up in your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the thing that I want. That doesn't have to be you. Doesn't have to be your cause, your charity. But
mm-hmm.
but what does have to happen is I want people to see you and get
mm-hmm.
to know you a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's question number four.
Mm-hmm.
And then question number five is the classical one, how do people reach out to you? But I will give you a hint on this. For somebody who has as many websites and domains as I do, right, it's
mm-hmm.
so hard not to say, hey, go to this URL and go to that URL and do this and do that. And what happens is when you give somebody a lot of choices, they make none.
Right.
So when somebody has like four or five things, I say, hey, can you pick two? Let's talk about them. For mm-hmm. me, I give one. What I do these days is I send people to MitchellLevy360.com. And then what may happen is I may actually say, well, go to this site, MitchellLevy360.com. And then in the way we did before, if you're curious about the LinkedIn course, it'll find it. If you want to see testimonials, it'll find that. If you want to book time on my calendar, you can do that directly from, and then I just
mm-hmm.
repeat the name again. And so I would suggest that in terms of how people reach out to you, what is the best way that you want somebody to actually engage with you? And so that's question number five. So those are the five questions.
That's great. And, you know, I think that, you know, I'm taking this in personally. I'm enjoying our conversation, which is what you and I are doing. I don't use the technology that you have by having this a visual. I did, Mitchell. I think we might have talked about that in the beginning when I first started beginning my hosting of this show. I was physically in a studio right here in my community where I live, where I was audio and visual. I had music. I paid a producer. I paid the guy that had the studio. I was able to have music. I took breaks. And a good percentage of those shows ended up on YouTube, depending upon the royalty rights of the music. And I really loved the intimacy of looking, talking, moving my hands, and engaging in a conversation when I'm physically looking at people, which is what we can do now in Zoom. And when I'm listening to you speak and recognizing that we're not looking at each other, but ideally, as anybody that will go to your site, they will see all of these videos with you, it does make me want to ask that question of myself. You know, you do a Facebook Live prior to your show, Marcia, every week, and that certainly can initiate some interest for people that do Facebook. My daughter doesn't do Facebook. And so, you know, you have to kind of know who you're trying to reach. I do a newsletter. Perhaps, you know, that's another way of letting people know that if they go to my BornToTalkRadioShow.com website, of which I have just that one website, they can read about me, they can see where I started, and they can subscribe. But how I'm much different than the customer point of pain is that I'm a team of one. And therefore, you know, how much weight do you want on your shoulders before you can't stand up straight? And so, you know, I'm applying a lot of the things that you're saying and find this all so, so interesting. So what I'd like to know as we close this out just very, very soon now, and I don't know if you can give me a quick answer to this, but what have you learned doing this that's actually surprised you?
And how much, by the way, how much time do we have? I'm not looking at it.
Well, you know what? Here's the reality. I can do an hour and a half. The Blog Talk Radio does not shut me off. And so if we run over 5 minutes, that's okay with me. So I say don't censor yourself and go ahead and answer that. If it runs beyond 2 o'clock in live time, well, then it did. So I'm good with that.
All right. Well, I'll do it quickly. And if you want, we can also practice with your personal CPAP. So
there you go.
Here's what I ultimately learned, and it turned out I must have been around interview 100, maybe 150. And it was the first podcast I was doing where I was speaking on somebody's show. And it was one of those hosts, by the way, I love the host that works with you ahead of time, that you get to talk and get to know them better. And you're one of those people that you want to talk to people before you come in the air. And I really appreciate that. And what he said to me is, Mitchell, what did you learn? What came out? Same question you just had. Like, what came out? And what popped into my head as I was thinking about it, which turned out to be the title of the show, is to show up when you show up. And I broke that into three pieces. The first is to come early. And that's the piece that's really fascinating. And you remember the stats before where so many people come late or super late. Right, like, okay, come early. The second is to be prepared. Right, if you have a meeting with somebody in today's world, there is no reason that you don't Google their name before you meet with them. Even if it's just 5 or 10 minutes, just a little bit. There could be something really important in their lives or in the business life that will change everything and change the nature of the conversation if all you did is Google them. So those people who show up to my show and they come unprepared, like, really? That's credible? And the third, and this is really shocking as well, is only 70% of the people do it, and that's come with your heart. It's impossible for somebody to get to know, like, and trust you if you're a robot.
Yes.
And there are people who just present very robotically without emotion. And, you know, that works for a certain class of people. Maybe engineers want to hear from other engineers in that way. But if you're too much of a robot, you're going to lose people's attention. And once again, I can't get to know, like, and trust you if I can't get to see your heart. Because that's really the both good news and bad news is what should we be doing? Show up when you show up. And the shocking surprises were the people who were on the other side, who showed up late, that they didn't prepare and they didn't come with their heart. And I just, in today's world, I still am very surprised when people are in business, but they don't really want to be in business because they don't come with their heart or they don't prepare
right.
for a meeting. I'm like, really? I don't understand it.
And don't you find that when people are authentic, when people are genuine, when people's voice, body language, and words match, they are people that you want to know more. But if someone's speaking with you, but they're looking up at the sky, it's like, oh, this is so boring. I wonder when this is going to be over. You know, the unspoken words and body language, I read that, and I tell people, look, it, I was born to talk. I've been talking since I've been walking. I know that about me. I understand that some people might go, oh, God, here she comes. Oh, she's stalking me on Facebook. Oh, geez, I can't even stay on Facebook because every time I'm on, she's sending me a message. I'm mindful of that, whether I am taking a walk in my neighborhood and pull my mask down just to say hi to somebody and what kind of dog do you have. I'm genuine. I genuinely am interested in what people do, which is why I enjoy what I do. And I think that if people don't show up when you're supposed to show up, people are going to see that and they're going to say, well, that's nice, but I'm not interested. And I think that that's just human nature, don't you?
Yes. Yes. And I think just one of the last things to take away is,
yes.
is the person who is showing up when you show up process the world most likely differently than you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, they're processing either auditorily, visually, or kinesthetically.
Mm-hmm.
And so regardless of where you reside, your job is to figure out where that other person is and to make sure you communicate in such a way that they could see it, hear it, or feel it appropriately.
Correct.
And those are the words. So just in terms of your show, you know, it depends on your audience. You know, if your audience is just going to listen to you in Blog Talk Radio, why do anything else? On the other hand, I'll bet you're missing out a little bit on the kinesthetic side and the visual side by not having visual stuff. And there's no right or wrong, by the way. It's just it talks about who you can serve.
Right. And so I always think that at the end of a show, for Marcia, for me personally, I like to go away with a takeaway, and I like to put that in my blog about what the takeaways are. And for me, that is a takeaway. Maybe I really do need to spend a little bit of time, and if I'm not the expert, find the expert that says, you know, Marcia, I do videos, and yeah, it's in my office, and yeah, you're going to see what's in my office, but you're also going to see me, and it's something you might want to consider. No judgment. Maybe you won't want to consider it, but if you don't even consider it, it won't even be a thought process. So I just want to thank you, truly. You're an inspiration to somebody like me that has done as much as you've done, and I think your book coming out is going to be wonderful. And I think you are another term that you hear all the time now are influencers. And I think you are one of those people that's an influencer. And I think that explains why you were able to do so many interviews and find people that had a story to share and could spend time with them. And I, like you said, you've got a million different links, and I'm going to just stick with that main, MitchellLevy360.com. And let people know that they can learn more about you and what you offer that way. And I want to thank you so very much, Mitchell, for your time today, because you've certainly made my Monday afternoon a very pleasant one.
Mm. That is so sweet. Thank you so much. And my pleasure. And we'll have another call sometime soon. We'll talk about your CPAP.
There we will. That sounds like a great idea. But I would imagine that you have a schedule that I hope has some balance. I hope you are able to get out and breathe in some fresh air and maybe do a couple of stretches and have some water and then move on to your next appointment. But I just want to thank you for your generosity of spending that time with me today. And I look forward to my show next week because, you know, I will be having another show next week. So until now, everybody, I want to just wish you all a safe, pleasant week during these uncertain times. That doesn't mean you can't make the most out of your life because you only get one. So thanks once again for joining me, Mitchell, and I'll let you get on with the rest of your day and the rest of you as well.
My pleasure.
Uh-huh.
Thank
Bye
you,
for now,
Take
everybody.
Care, everybody.
You too.